6, 2013. We have four bills before us. Two are capital outlay for the bonding bill, if that is put together. This committee would review, give counsel and suggestions, but it would be advisory, and those recommendations in a month or so will be forwarded on to the Capital Investment Committee chaired by Senator Stumpf. The first item before us is Senate File 120, Senator Skoy, for the Red Lake School District. Welcome, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I am here with Senate File 120. Senate File 120 is currently a maximum effort loan request that would be used for the continued renovation of the Red Lake Middle and High Schools. We've been working on renovating Red Lake schools across the district for a number of years now, and I think you have a handout that does walk through some of the history and the timeline of efforts that we've been making to continue fixing these schools up.
And excuse me, Senator Skoy, since this is being televised for viewers as well, could you tell us Red Lake and the state, where it's at, just a little background? And
sure. For those of you that look at the map of Minnesota, there's two blue circles up in the north central part. Those are the Red Lakes, Upper Red Lake and Lower Red Lake. About a third or half of Upper Red Lake and all of Lower Red Lake are surrounded by the Red Lake Reservation. Red Lake Reservation is a closed reservation, meaning that the land is held in common by its members, and hence their property tax base for private property is very, very low. And therefore, the initiative that we're carrying through on with regard to the maximum effort loan program here today. They are about 60 miles or so from the Canadian border at the closest, and stretch down close to Bemidji, primarily in Beltrami and Clearwater counties. Mr. Chair and members, as we have been working on the renovation of the Red Lake schools, we did have a tragic shooting that occurred at Red Lake that interrupted our renovation. We had to change our plans and do a continual, a major changeover to the entrance to the school, spend significant efforts on school safety and access restrictions at the high school and the middle school. And so we have, that has been completed now. But we would like to move forward with the rest of the renovation. There's a significant number of issues, and the superintendent is here with me today to talk about some of those, but I would just like to briefly mention one that I know is of utmost importance that we're, if we were able to address it, and that is dealing with the school's kitchens. They're operating out of early 1950s vintage kitchens. They're operating two of them. Some of the, in fact, the salad bar is served in the hallway. Oof. And it really is of utmost importance that we're able to consolidate these two kitchens into one and have one dining area for the school districts, just as a food safety factor as much as a money-saving effort. I would like to just talk real briefly about the school funding and school referendum for building. The state of Minnesota does have a debt service revenue program that equalizes the debt service on building at a couple of levels. They take into account the total between the high and the low of the district's adjusted net tax capacity, and then the state equalizes those costs so that as you go across the state, the tax burden on homes for building improvements would be comparable. And that's the nature of the equalization program that the state has for all a number of different levies. But there is a number of school districts in the state, I'm not going to remember if it's 19 or 21, that because of their relatively low property values, they do not have the capability to make all of the 50-year bond payments and have the bonds paid off and still maintain this comparable debt or tax burden on their properties. And hence, the state has the maximum effort loan program. That is a program that we're requesting funding out of at this point. And so I don't know exactly how much detail you'd like me to go into with regard to that, other than I wanted to make the committee aware that there are a number of school districts across the state that utilize this, and we would ask for a positive consideration from this committee to move this bill to the capital investment committee on down the road. But I think with that, I'd like to turn it over to the
Is there a question, Senator Pratt?
No, thank you.
Okay, no, the excellent overview of Senator Scoy, and we know this has been under consideration for a number of years. When I was a member of capital investment, I remember going through that cafeteria that you described, and we clearly there's a disparity in and inequality in facilities and amongst the schools in our state. That's a very good example, so something that you're going to try to address here. So with that background, we'll go to your testifiers. And
sure, and Mr. Chair, there, I guess the handout wasn't handed out, so we'll be handing that out now, and that'll provide some information on the project. And so with that, if I could turn it over to Superintendent.
Okay. Welcome, Superintendent Wymore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bonjour. With me today, I have School Board Treasurer Roy Nelson, our school business manager, Willie Larson, and also our facility supervisor, Chris Borg. Some of the information I provide in my prepared statement is redundant from what Senator Scoy had provided with you, but I hope that you'll bear with me. I'd like to thank Senator Chuck Wieger, the chairman of the Senate Finance E-12 Division Committee, and its members for your time to hear Senate File 120. I also wish to thank Senator Rod Scoy for his authorship. We believe the provisions of Senate File 120 strengthen the Red Lake Public School District. Red Lake Public Schools employs a staff of 336 employees on three separate sites. The district employees include 162 non-licensed employees, 179 licensed employees, 167 of whom are teachers. The district provides education for 1,378 students in grades kindergarten through 12, inclusive of an alternative learning program. Independent School District Number 38, Red Lake Schools, with a 2010 U.S. Census population of 5,890 and comprising an area of 1,014 square miles, is located approximately 265 miles north of the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area along Minnesota State Trunk Highways 1 and 89. It lies completely within the boundaries of the Red Lake Indian Reservation. The Red Lake Schools is a consolidated school district serving the communities of Red Lake, Redby, Panema, and Little Rock. Red Lake Schools is a unique school in that it resides fully within a federal trust land reservation, one of only two reservations that remain in the United States. The recent horrific event at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, raise memories of the tragedy that occurred March 21st of 2005 on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, which continues to affect everyone who lives and works in the community and at the school. However, the lessons learned from that tragedy have been utilized to provide one of the most caring and nurturing environments possible in facilities badly in need of improvement. The district has submitted a capital loan funding request every year since 2002, yet has only received appropriations twice that were approved by the governor. Both of these appropriations were only small percentages of the request. The original request in 2002 was for $37.9 million, which escalated in today's dollars equals approximately $68 million. These requests are for additions and improvements to the district facilities. Since the district does not have adequate bonding capacity due to the large amount of federal property in the district, requests must be made to the state of Minnesota for capital loans. While pieces of the project were approved in 2002 and in 2005, the cost for the remainder of the project continues to grow. Over the past 5 years, the legislature has included appropriations for these projects only to have them vetoed by the governor, and last year the Red Lake Schools bonding request was not included in the funded projects. The Minnesota Department of Education had requested $32,586,656 in funding last year through the Maximum Effort Capital Loan Program to support the Red Lake Independent School District 38 in bringing the district facilities to current educational standards. At that time, the Minnesota Department of Education pointed out that a measure commonly used to compare a school district's ability to raise funds through property taxes is the adjusted net tax capacity per pupil unit. The Red Lake ANTC per fiscal year 2010 adjusted pupil unit was $7.32. Statewide, the median school district ANTC per adjusted pupil unit is $6,536. While the challenges our public parents, staff, and students face can be overwhelming, the Red Lake Schools continues to be an expedient for fostering a strong community, that is, the Red Lake Nation. I would like to ask the committee to support Senate File 120 and appropriate $33 million for the Red Lake Schools renovation and construction project that can be completed with these capital funds. With these enhancements, the district can begin reinforcing the programs that have suffered as a result of inadequate facilities and send a message to the constituents of the Red Lake Schools that the state of Minnesota is willing to help the district provide high-quality education in a nurturing, caring, and safe environment where resources can be focused on raising student achievement for all children. Miigwech, thank you. I have with me Facilities Supervisor Chris Borg, who could go through the project in phases if you would so desire, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Superintendent Weimar. For the others that accompanied you, if they'd like to share a few comments for the record, and if members then have subsequent discussion items or questions, we would open it up. But why don't we invite others from Red Lake to join us? Welcome, and please state your name for the tape.
Chris Borg.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members, for your time. Just going to go through their
And Chris, you're the building grounds manager for the district?
That's correct.
Yep. Okay.
We have six priorities that we broke the work into. Got a PowerPoint. Oh. PowerPoint I'd like to share with you. Priority one is construction of the kitchen, cafeteria, construction of receiving and dock, and adjacent site work. The first priority is the creation of a single lunchroom and kitchen for the entire high school and middle school, replacing two outdated facilities. The projects include a new building receiving area.
Excuse me, and for members, we have a lot of good background information. We're referring to this document now for the overhead.
Thank you, Mr. Please Chairman. Proceed. It's on page four, also. That's where I'm starting. It also includes a stormwater retention fire service drive. You can see green, that's where that addition would be added. Existing building footprint is there of the middle school, high school. Here I just added a picture of some of the antiquated equipment that we have in the kitchens. Building is decades and decades old, a little crude, but this is a picture of a bathroom that's connected to the kitchen. You can see some mold up on top of the ceiling and the ceiling fan there. It's hard to get a lot of these pictures because it's such a small area. This is where they keep the produce. This is, of course, where they wash dishes. Kind of get a flavor of the area. Priority two, media center, central plant improvements, physical education and fitness, high school media center, district office, and student services. With the completion of this new kitchen and cafeteria, the original elementary school can be demolished. This area includes a storm boiler plant, or steam boiler plant, middle school kitchen, cafeteria, and multiple elevation changes. Once removed, district student services, media center, and technologies labs, and PE locker rooms and support areas will be built and expanded. A 2010 Department of Commerce and Energy grant began the central heating plant expansion and decommission, the old steam plant. Additional work remains and will complete other central plant elements, including versions of remaining existing areas to all hot water. So this is the last steam plant that's in here. Once that goes, we'll have glycol and hot water in the entire district. This area also contains asbestos. It'll be the last of the areas in the district that have asbestos. This is a picture of our admin building. Just to give you an idea. Picture the steam boilers. You can see they're antiquated and not very energy efficient, and to be candid, they're getting to the point where they're unsafe. This is a picture of a ceiling tiles. With the ceiling tiles missing, you can see mastic. That's where that's asbestos containing. Priority 3, high school vocational center, middle school hands-on learning lab, middle school fitness and nutrition center. Currently, the high school vocational center is located within the middle school. The construction would replace the current small and outdated facility with a new vocational center in the high school. It will be a self-contained facility, which will allow for the use of alternative and adult education programs without distributing activities in other parts of the building. When the new high school vocational center is complete, the old spaces are well, as the old high school cafeteria can be converted to a middle school hands-on learning labs, shop technology labs, fitness and nutrition center. Priority 4, service drives and lot, site improvements, environmental studies, vocational building envelope, and future furniture, fixtures, and equipment, or FF&E. Priority includes completing parking lot, sidewalks, stormwater management, landscaping, biology studies area, and educational furniture, fixtures, and equipment. This area was remodeled in 2010 with ERA funding. That was the inside of the building, but the outside envelope of the building is in bad need of repair. Priority 5, Panema Elementary. The proposed project would provide an expansion to the media center, a safe bus transfer area, and PE fields for both the school and community. Panema is located about 30 miles north of Red Lake. Priority number 6, the Red Lake Elementary and Early Childhood Center. The elementary school is crowded and over capacity with special purpose classrooms designed for art, science, music, used as general purpose classroom and storage areas, now used as special education areas. Temporary wood buildings have been added for storage of equipment. The proposed project would add classrooms, special education spaces, support spaces, and renovations to the mechanical and electrical systems, as well as link the two schools to provide increased safety, flexibility, use of the building. Any questions at all?
Questions of the Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, really a comment, not a question. It's really just heartbreaking to see the conditions that are your current conditions, and I'm pleased and proud that the Senate has put these requests in our bill previously and disappointed that ultimately they were vetoed. And so, Senator Skoy, you just have my full support to do all we can. And I just also wanted to comment on your students who went to Sandy Hook, because I think nationally that lifted the spirits of everyone, seeing that those kids had the empathy and the capacity in their own healing to be able to go and play a helping role there. So thank you so much for making that happen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Since 2004 or 5, when the request first came in, are the numbers up to date in terms of the priority ranking, or are these the numbers that you had in earlier versions?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I believe these are a result of the latest Department of Education work, and then they went to the construction company for the final cost numbers. That's not correct, maybe.
We're using the DLR group to assist us in the design of our program and also assisting with the estimates.
Okay, for the record, we'll assume that it's updated. You'll have that chance, though, to provide that information, if not, as this progresses.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, one of the things that has happened as we've staged these construction projects is there have been costs because of the staging. And so it wasn't like we were able to just take the total project cost from 2002 when we started this and start whittling away at it. We have whittled away at it, but there have been increased costs because of the staged nature of the project and also because of the, over the last 11 years, construction costs have changed.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy and Superintendent, it is nice to have it broken down so that you can actually see what you feel is priority one versus, you know, the other priority. So I think that's a very nice way to present it.
Other questions? I'd like to invite the other representatives from Red Lake, if they just like to introduce themselves for the record. If they want to offer a statement of support, please do. Welcome.
Yes. Good morning. Roy Nelson here. I've just put this on temporarily. This is my calling card. And then, you know, I go to D.C. to lobby the Minnesota delegation on behalf of Impact Aid Funds for the school district. And he asked for a hat about 15 years ago and stuff like this. And I don't know if any of you were all watching the inauguration. Yeah. The camera must have zoomed in on Colin Peterson. And he had his hat on and stuff like that. So he put us on the map, you know, worldwide, basically, I think. Yeah. So. Because, yeah, I work EMS services. I was got off at 8 o'clock that morning. By 9:30, I was sleeping. The phone was ringing off the hook about 11:30, quarter to 12. But, no, I just like to – no, I got elected to the school district back in 91. And strong push for academic is where I come from and stuff like this. But as for the building project and stuff and everything, it's been ongoing for a long time. I'd like to really encourage everyone to – consider it and stuff, because I remember the old Panema Elementary one. It was actually built out of wood and stuff like this, yeah. So, and then they got some nice planks out of it for, you know, made a dock for the lake and stuff like this, yeah. But it's since got demolished. But yeah, it was, you know, that was an old one. Yeah, I think that might have been 1900 or something like this. But anyway, yeah, just strong consideration, and thank everybody here for, you know, helping us and stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the board members. Wondering how much of your district or and your students are part of the Red Lake Indian community?
Oh. Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt. The Red Lake Indian Reservation is a closed reservation,
mm-hmm.
So if it's not 100%, it's certainly well over 90% are Red Lake members. I don't know the exact number, but it would be significantly high percentage, yeah, because it's a closed reservation.
But basically 98%.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Oh, sorry. I forgot to mention.
No, you're good.
So, but anyway, yeah, about, you know, about that number and stuff like this, yeah, so...
Sir Pratt.
Thank you. Follow up. How much is the reservation helping out with the building project? I know in my district, The Mittawakaton contribute to some of the school projects that we have.
Okay.
And looking at the net tax capacity being extremely low for this district, I certainly see the need, but looking for that partnership as well.
If I can, Roy Nelson here, school board member. Okay, as for the tax base, there's some small pieces of land which the railroad used to own, but now there's some homeowners that actually own them, but they're small. I mean, big time, yeah.
Senator Skoy.
I think the question is if the band itself is helping out on the school project. Red Lake is in a very rural part of the state. They do have a casino in south of Thief River and one in War Road, but they're not at all profitable like the ones on the metropolitan fringe here. They just don't have the population to be generating the kind of revenues that you would be expecting that could help fund this school project. They really are more work programs is what I tend to view them as. So to ask the band when they have such a large number of needs internally within their own population to be helpful of the school district when we have the maximum effort loan program in place for the state, they just don't have the capability to be supportive of that at that level. And this is an independent school district, and they're making the same request that other school districts have made.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things you mentioned, impact aid dollars, and it's such a need up there that the federal government, through the Department of Education, through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, gets money. And I forgot the per pupil for early childhood. But I love the fact you connect the early childhood program, which has an indoor play yard. So I've been there. And the proposed expansion. One of the things, and Senator Bonoff mentioned, is music being used as general purpose classrooms. And then you have the special education areas are in storage rooms. And that's really disheartening for me. And I hope this goes through and you get my whole support on this. But I know the need up there, and I think we need to act. So thank you for your presentation.
Well, I mean, everybody's a
Mr. Nelson.
Whenever you get around, excuse me. If you ever get around to it, hey, by all means, come up and visit and stuff. So,
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. How is the sequestration, what might happen at the federal level, going to impact the Red Lake district?
Senator Skoy, do you have a specific?
Senator Stumpf, I don't know that. I guess we can check into it, but I honestly don't know that.
Yeah, Senator Stumpf, we just recently we distributed something, $23 million, having a $9 to $10 million impact on special ed, Title I, various other aspects then, which would be parceled out to individual districts, and it will impact this district as well.
Mr. Chair, the business manager, Mr. Larson, would
Mr.
have
Mr. Larson.
My name is Willie Larson. I'm the business manager for Red Lake School District, Mr. Chairman. The answer to the question about the sequestration is one that we're looking at it from the perspective of about $1.6 million a year we're going to lose based on that. And that's taking an estimate of 8 to 9%. If it goes as high as 18%, like some are talking, I mean, we're looking at over $3 million a year that it'll affect us. And those are dollars that are directly used to do some of these interim little projects that we have with our kids to try to make them work as best we can within our buildings.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further testifiers or anyone else in the audience like to address the committee? Not... Senator Skoy, testifiers, thank you for your presentation. On a personal note, I mentioned I had been up there with the bonding committee to see firsthand, the significant, embarrassing disparity that we have in educational opportunity, and you're here again. We have provided, as Senator Bonoff mentioned, we have provided the recommendations in the past. They've been vetoed twice.
and here we are again. You're a proud area, working hard. I have so many memories just growing up fishing Upper Red Lake and Tamarack River at the source, running into that. And we're very proud to have you here to reiterate those concerns, and hopefully we'll get some positive action this session. So thank you, and we will lay this over for comments that will be forwarded on to the bonding committee within the next few weeks.
Thank you for your consideration, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Hey, Senator Lori's Senate File 297, that companion bill is being presented in the House right now. So we'll hopefully get to that later during our committee meeting this morning. We'll go next to the Senate File 38, which will be followed by 146, and we have Senator Hoffman. Welcome, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members. I want to move, I believe I want to move to have this put over into the omnibus bill to be taken up. But last week you heard Senate File 38. It was an information and awareness presentation from various folks, including school personnel and citizens, regarding the free and reduced side. And 8 years ago, when I first came on to the Anoka-Hennepin School Board, a presentation was given about the fact that there was a number of youth that were not getting nutrition, and so much that a former school board member this year, who is now a state legislator, and I had the same discussion, and we saw the need and believe that this is good for all students. And we know it because research, as you were well aware in the presentations, research has it that, you know, food nutrition, when a child has got the food nutrition, the ability to do better on tests, and the data is there. So I don't know. I could stand for questions on this one, Mr. Chair, but I think the information that was there last week should be sufficient. I really believe that this will be a good impact. And, you know, the fact that one of the things came up, too, was the amount of money, $3.5 million, which is less than what we originally thought, to make sure that the reduced side, those kiddos are getting the nutrition that they need throughout the day. So,
and members, the fiscal note was handed out a couple of weeks ago, I believe. But if it's not in your committee packet, we can make copies for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, Mr. Chair, committee members, there was testimony that was also handed out as well last week that you should also have in your packet as well. So,
questions of Senator Hoffman? Senator Nino.
Mr. Chair, on these next two bills, is the intent to lay these over for possible inclusion, or are we going to move these along as standalone bills?
Lay over for possible inclusion.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then I will not be offering any amendments here today, but I will ask some questions. Senator Hoffman, I saw this bill in the policy committee, and I had handed out a potential amendment to put in some reasonable limitations on the proposal, because my and those that pay attention, I was interviewed by NPR as well as Senator Hayden talking about a similar proposal. And my concern is that we're taking a very broad approach for what is a relatively narrow problem. And there's a distinct difference between a six-year-old that's showing up at school and isn't getting their free or reduced lunch because mom and dad are irresponsible or don't have the money or whatever the case might be, and a 16 or 17 or 18 or 19 or even 20-year-old that is showing up at school and isn't getting their free or reduced lunch because mom and dad didn't put the money on the account. And I can see the argument where there's a problem with a six-year-old. I can't see the argument where there's a problem with a 16-year-old. And this bill would give every 16-year-old free lunch. Now, that same 16-year-old, if they go to class and take the test and whatnot, we will give them the authority to drive a deadly weapon down the freeway at 75 miles an hour, putting my life at risk, but they're not responsible enough to make a peanut butter sandwich and bring it into school. We need to target where the problem is and identify that and be responsible with the taxpayers' money and not just throw millions of dollars at a problem to fix what really should be an isolated solution. And I could go on and on and on here, but that's my concern with these bills, Mr. Chair, is that I can see where there's a concern, but we needed to have a targeted solution, not a blanket solution that encompasses everybody, because I don't think that's the most responsible and efficient use of taxpayer funding, and because this will be millions of dollars if we pass these bills as they're written.
Response, and then as you're preparing on that response, if there are amendments that you want to just put out for discussion, we won't take action at this point, but working with the author and others, I would encourage that. You can certainly offer them later as the case will arise, but if there's the chance to discuss these before that, I would encourage that. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nenow, I appreciate your comments. There's some ambiguity in saying that every 16-year-old will get it. We know that the area I'm from, 77% of the people are providing the dollars, to pay for the lunches. And you're talking about a minute amount. Well, 23%. Take 23% of 41,000. What does that give you? 8,000. 8,000 plus. That's almost a school district in and of itself. So it's not a broad stroke at it. It's really isolating just the reduced side. According to the guidelines established by our federal Department of Agriculture, that specifically spells out, a family of four, a family of five, a family of six, those over families of nine, you add another $3,500 as far as the guideline goes. That structure's already in place. Our food nutrition specialists, which, by the way, you saw through the testimony, Mr. Chair and committee members, that they're efficiently, fiscally vigilant run systems. I stand coming from a system that 2.9% of the money goes to administrative costs. I own a business, and that's 33% of my money goes into administration costs. So when I looked at the prudence that was there among our food nutrition folks, they're self-sufficient. That extra little bit of money, and we're talking $3.5 million system-wide just to cover the reduced side of folks, fills a lot of gaps. And we know that it's going to be money that's used well in our state. And I know that personally, and also I know that with the folks that we dealt with last week.
Senator Nenow.
Senator Hoffman, if I happen to have $2 million in stock, but I don't have any income this year, would I qualify for your free lunch?
There's three issues that come up, Mr. Chair. Sorry. The SNAP program has looked at it. The Department of Agriculture has specific guidelines. I don't know the answer to the stock question, because I guess I would have to understand, is that revenue-generated stock or is that stock that's set aside for future discussion? I could get that question from Bjorn. Bjorn, do you have an idea of where that dollar is, Mr. Chair?
The eligibility requirements take into account household income. So if a family's wealth was generating income that would be reported on family household tax return, that income would be part of the calculation or sort of determination of eligibility for free and reduced programs.
Senator Nenow, then Senator Bonoff,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hoffman, let me tell you how the financial markets work. The most aggressive growth companies don't pay dividends, because they're putting all their money back into the growth of the company. So I don't realize income, generally speaking, or you or whoever invests in these companies from that stock, because they are up-and-coming growth companies and they're not paying dividends out to stockholders. They're putting that money and investing into the growth of the company. So I can have millions of dollars of stock and not have 1 cent of income, but be tremendously wealthy, at least on paper. The only time I would recognize income off of that stock is if I sold it and realized capital gains. That's my problem with these proposals as they're constructed. They're a very broad approach that's going to give free lunches to people that really don't need it. My family, for example, I have a larger family. I can make over $70,000 a year under these bills, and my kids get free lunch. I don't think a family making $70,000 a year should get free lunch. I don't think families making $50,000 a year should get free lunch. We're talking regular, everyday, middle-income families. Now, if you want to get down to maybe they're bad parents making $50,000 a year and they're not putting money into the account and you've got a 6 or 7 or 8 year old, I can see that argument. But if you've got a 15 or 16 or 17 or 18 year old, I would hope that they know how to make a sandwich. And that's what I'm talking about is, and that was my amendment, Mr. Chair. We could hand it out, but basically it said if you're making over $50,000 a year, or if the child is over 16, then this doesn't apply. Looking at some reasonable parameters rather than a shotgun approach that says, let's spend a bunch of money and fix a problem. Well, it's not a problem for the 16-year-old whose family's making $50,000 a year. And that's my point, Senator Hoffman. I'm not trying to go after you. I really am not. I'm just trying to get some reasonable parameters on dealing with what arguably is a legitimate problem.
Okay, well, Senator, your concern's been noted, and I think that amendment for discussion can there can be a further exploration of that. I believe Senator Bonoff, followed by others.
Mr. Chair, and you know, we all can view it in our own way through our own lens, but it seems, Senator Nienow, that that's a cynical perspective to think that there are really families that are so sophisticated with their investing that they're not taking any income and then applying for reduced price lunch. Because my experience is that applying for reduced price lunch is in some ways humiliating, particularly for the 16-year-olds and the 17-year-olds, and there's a real stigma attached to that. And so I'm almost most concerned about our students who are in that place in high school, because we know that if you're not eating, that you aren't learning at the same level as if hunger wasn't an issue. And so I think this is actually pretty narrow, where it says you only get this free if you qualify for free and reduced price meals. And again, to think that that somebody would, as just a ruse, apply for free and reduced price lunch, I think isn't consistent with what we find in our schools and what the districts and the nurses and the counselors would tell us.
Senator Nina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not about the families trying to manipulate the system. The schools promote this. I get solicitations all the time from the school saying, is your income below this amount? Please sign up because we get extra funding. So the schools promote this as something to do that's good for the school. And that's my concern.
Okay. And ultimately, you know, their motive is for the student. But, your philosophical concern is noted, and the amendment that will be under discussion as we put together our bill is in front of the members to further reflect on. I believe Senator Johnson is next.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, what would you, and this is the time that we're talking about what we might consider to be in the omnibus bill, what if we took this money and just added it on to the contribution, or there's support for the school lunch program, and then allowed school districts to do with it as they choose, which might be setting aside, and I would suggest, you know, setting aside a pool of money that could be available for people who, or children who don't have money in their accounts for whatever reason, and they would take care of that. There are many, many people who are on free and reduced lunch, and as people have alluded to, are very proud people. They're not happy to be eligible for free and reduced lunch. I think paying that 40 cents gives them some honor to themselves. And for those that do and can, that it is a good, it's not a bad thing. It's a pretty small amount of money compared to $2.50 or 15 cents or whatever the price might be. So it's just another thought, and I'd like your comments on it.
Please. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, you know, Senator Johnson, you're right. I mean, if we truly believed in free public education and we truly believe that it's a constitutional right, not a privilege, to be educated in the state of Minnesota. Wait a minute. Article 13 says it is a constitutional right. But if we truly embody that as a group of legislators or as a group of citizens, and we know that youth are spending the majority of their day in a school setting, then we would offer that as just an ongoing part of the everyday school. And I you know, entertain that and open to that. I know Jerry Newton and I and you have had the conversations in the past about that need and where it's going. But, you know, this specific bill fixes a problem on a specific amount of children, and it's a little bit of money, and it's worth the investment. So maybe that's another a debate that we can do, Mr. Chair.
Now, I'd like to invite Senator Hayden to join the conversation. We are taking each bill, but they're very similar, and we're
well, thank
happy
you, Mr.
that
Chair.
You're able to join us, and we'll just open the conversation. And Senator Hoffman, please stay there, and we will be laying these both over. And Senator Lori, we note that you're here, and we'll get to your two bills within 10 minutes or so. Senator Jensen, you're on deck.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Chair. So, Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, I just want to say thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you, members, and indulging me to just be a tad bit late as we go from one to the next. Sounds like it is a spirited discussion. I think other than questions that they may have specifically about my bill, it sounds like it's a great conversation, and I won't take up a lot of time. The thing I will say, though, is that I think that it is important that when we deliberate these issues, and I can appreciate Senator Nienow's perspective on this, but it is a perspective that comes from his lens. I think that Senator Bonoff said that it is a perspective of, you know, this is where I live, this is how I grew up, and this is kind of what I think should be. And we all kind of share in that. I would just invite members to say that we represent different districts and different situations, and that we are trying to kind of create an environment where children are fed, children are healthy, so that children can learn. And that is the goal of this. And so, you know, picking an arbitrary number one way or the other, we're using guidelines that are established that are broad, but they are established for a reason. And so I would just hope that as we start to think about this, we think about the children that live in our district, not necessarily even our own kind of value system that we grew up with. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hoffman and Senator Hayden, I have a question in regards to with this amendment. The guidelines
and
that are set
the
for free.
The amendment is not before us.
That's fine.
Now, but
I'll
it's
ask
for
it
your
in general.
Reference. Yes.
In general, then, the funding and the parameters set up for free and reduced lunch, that's a federal guidelines?
Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, yeah, the Department of Agriculture has established those. We follow those to the T. So
what your bill is asking is that the state would now generate some source of revenue from somewhere to supplement the money that's coming from the people that apply for those free and reduced and qualify. The state would take an active role in supplementing that money.
Senator, Mr. Sure. Chair, Senator Jensen, what we're specifically asking is, correct. The reduced side, the free and reduced portion. It's the reduced portion is to get those elevated up so that those meals are free.
Is there a current
Chair
state
Jensen.
Reimbursement? I'm sorry,
Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen. Yeah, the we're asking that we put in four. It's 12 cents. We're putting 42 cents on top of that 12, which brings it up to 54 cents. And if I'm off by a half a cent, please correct me, Bjorn. So, but that's the, you know, that's basically what we're asking.
Okay, Mr. Chair. So the scope of your bill is just to asking the state reimbursement that's already being out there just to increase it to those people that already qualify.
And the reimbursement.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen. Yep.
Thank you. A statement from the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition is being distributed, and I believe their director or representatives here to provide testimony if you would like. So please approach if that's the case. And as you do that, Senator Stumpf had a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This morning we had an opportunity, a number of us, to experience what a school lunch amounted to, and it was quite good. But I could understand why we need this extra 42 cents. I think if we had to depend on that school lunch to function, I think many of us would be like Senator Laurie, who said that when he was running, he went through about 7,000 calories a day. And I'm sure that we'd all be in pretty we could all go shopping for new clothes if we stayed on that school lunch menu very long anyway. So I think the school lunch program is, you know, they watch their expenditures quite closely, and for the last number of years we've tried to encourage them to change and to add, more whole grain fruit type breads, and to add more vegetables and add more fruits, and I think that that got picked up nationally over the last several years, and I really think that the emphasis on the nutrition is something that could change the health in the United States, or in Minnesota in particular, quite a bit. I used to always get complaints back saying that, someone who's in charge of the nutrition programs, first of all, when we asked for those changes, they said, well, we don't have access to that. The distributors don't have that as an option. Then when push came to shove a little bit and they started looking for different places to buy that type of food, then all of a sudden the distributors found a way to come up with it. And so I think the focus on the nutrition does cost extra, and that was a clear message that the nutritionist gave us, is that if you want us to provide more fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains, it's going to be more costly. And I think that most of the programs are run very close to the vest in terms of functioning.
Senator Johnson.
Yes, just to your point, Senator Stump. Basically, I look at this as not new money for school districts. This is replacing. So it will not help to provide funding for the extra nutritional foods that are being, just to make sure that everyone understands that.
Sarah Nino. Then we'll go to our
thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to make a similar point that the purpose of these bills is we've heard proposals to increase funding for school nutrition, and those points can be made. But the purpose of these bills is not to that end, really. The purpose of these bills is to get to a question of hunger. Are students being properly and nutritionally fed and getting what they need to be able to learn? And I've heard this in another committee, and I would acknowledge that there may be some concerns there. My larger point is just that we need to target our resources. We're in a deficit budget, a series of deficit budgets, and we need to be judicious with the taxpayer dollars. And I think this is an overly broad approach that could be scoped down and more narrowly focused and be more efficient with the taxpayer dollars. But the question of student nutrition, student hunger and student nutrition are separate. They can be commingled. They certainly could be commingled, but this bill isn't getting towards that nutritious aspect. It's about whether the students are getting fed in general.
Thank you. Mr. Rushy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't take up too much time. I'm Brian Rushy, Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. We had the letter distributed. Just very quickly say this is a priority issue for us. I think that it is the whole benefit of this approach is that it is targeted, and it's a magnificent use of resources from the standpoint of learning, closing the opportunity gap. And I think that we have to face what is a very real situation about income inequality and the number of families in Minnesota that are really struggling. This is where we want to put resources in our young people so that they're better learners, so that we can build a better workforce. So it just seems to be a very smart allocation of resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rushi. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Senators Hoffman, Hayden, thank you very much. Your proposals will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Senator Lori. He has two proposals in Senate File 297, and we're also wondering about losing 7,000 calories.
Well, thank you, Senator Stump, for taking a private comment about my diet and putting it on the public record. That's appreciated. I should clarify, this is when I was running marathons the last month of training, I was eating 7,000 calories a day. They were the best months of my life when I got to do that. I mean, we're talking eggs and bacon and steaks and potatoes and ice cream, unlimited. Just, it's wonderful. It's why you should run, in my humble opinion. But anyway, those are...
Welcome.
Thank you.
We have before us Senate File 297. There is an author's amendment, and Senator Weber moves the author's amendment.
A1
amendment. Amongst the pile of material, we'll make sure it's in front of you. Anyone with questions? Okay. All in favor, indicate aye. Opposed? Adopted. Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 297, I'm going to be very brief and let the superintendents, Mr. Chuck Eller from Rushford Peterson, and Superintendent Bob Bendehart from Moose Lake, do the lion's share of the presentation today. I'm going to just talk about really, the state's response when we have areas that have very low property wealth to begin with and have really struggled to try to provide the adequate environment in which to teach our children and, have not been able to pass referendums in the past and have really aging facilities. Both of these were started in the 30s, these school districts. And then really the piece that sets them apart is a natural disaster. Both of these districts suffered devastating floods that really wreaked havoc on their communities and on their schools and further deteriorated the property values in the communities, putting referendums further out of reach. And I just believe that the state really needs a more robust response in these unique situations where we have the triple whammy of the low property wealth, the aging facilities not meeting the needs of the children, and then a natural disaster that just really exacerbates these situations. Rushford Peterson's flood was in 2007, Moose Lake's, and all of northeastern Minnesota's was just this last summer, this last June, and it really kind of woke us up, and I think that the time is right to try to have a better response. This is a bonding proposal for $20 million for each of the districts. They would still be required to pass a referendum locally to put up a local share. Our communities are very committed to our children and are willing to do that local share, but it's just out of reach in the current structure, and this would help a great deal. So with that brief introduction, I will turn it over to Superintendent Indahar from Moose Lake first.
Thank you, Senator, and welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you. I'm Superintendent Bob Indahar from the Moose Lake School District. Chairman Wieger, I am here to testify on Senate File 297, which addresses the need for help with bonding in Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson. In June of 2012, the Moose Lake community was devastated with floodwaters. There was a valiant attempt to save the school, but in the end, water seeped through the walls in the elementary and rushed through the walls in the high school. If you take a look at the picture that I had in that flyer, the bottom one probably tells the tale the best as far as what happened there. The high school is the part that actually isn't in the water, but the high school sustained a big chunk of the damage because the water came in from underneath. The damage or the impact to our school and the community was great. We ended up having $853,000 worth of damage. FEMA ended up paying over $750,000 of that, and insurance covered about $66,000 of it. The community was also devastated. We had a third of the community was substantially flooded and had significant damage. I do want to say a good thing, and that is that, and first of all, I want to thank you guys because you guys voted to give us the 25% of the FEMA money. Moose Lake thanks you. We would have been devastated without that. And I do want to tell you that the FEMA process worked for Moose Lake schools, okay? It was efficient. We have about 90% of the money right now, and we're just kind of wrapping up some loose ends. So, again, thank you, and we believe the FEMA process worked for us. Another big thing that I wanted to talk to you about is that I was talking to John Bolger from the State Department somewhere before school started, and he said it's a known fact you're going to lose students. That's what happens when you have a flood. And didn't really believe him, to be honest with you, but we found out we lost 36 students from last year to this year. That's a phenomenal amount for us, and they haven't come back yet. 36 students for us is about 5% of our population. We have a school of about 640 kids. So as you know, that's how we get our funding. So that certainly didn't help us.
Superintendent, students who opted for another district.
What's that?
Students who opted to go to another district.
Yes. Chairman, yes. What are we worried about? Our building's back together. We got it, if you can believe from that picture, that was about early July late June till September. We got our building going. Okay, building looks nice. It's got paint. It's got some new sheetrock. So what would we be worried about? We're worried about the long-term impact of what this flood did. And Chuck will have a better examples than I will because we're just moving through the process right now. But some of the things that we're worried about is if that water was rushing underneath our building, what sort of erosion occurred? What's going on with our foundation? How about everything that was underwater, the corrosion, the rust? What about mold? You know, we're testing our building periodically to make sure there's no mold growth. But, of course, we know that mold is probably not going to grow when it's 10 below. It's probably going to grow when it gets warmer out. So what's going to happen this summer? Anyhow, we don't want to be in the position that Rushford Peterson's in right now, and he'll talk about that in just a little bit. We want to move our building to a higher ground. As Senator Lori said, we have an older building. We have tried in the past 10 years, we've tried three times to pass a bond. It does not pass. We are in a good position that we own 180 acres of high ground. So we're just kind of waiting, you know, to move our building up to higher ground. Another worry we have is, are we going to continue to lose students? We were a pretty stable population. We started declining a little bit. Now we took a big decline. What's going to happen, next year or the year after? Will we continue to lose students because of the flood? But the big point I want to make is, how do we in Moose Lake pass a bond? You know, we have a community in crisis. We have people who are, you know, they got new furnaces and whatnot. They're just barely making it now. But our community's in crisis. We're losing students. We have a poor tax base. We've tried to go out for bonds. They haven't passed in normal years, and now the flood just exacerbated everything. So that is our concern. So why are we asking for $20 million? That's a lot of money. Okay? We need it. We need it to pass our bond. The system in place for bonding has winners and losers. I think you guys are trying to address it. You know that some districts it's easier to pass bonds than others. Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson, we are in the loser category. If we passed our bonds right now, there would be about $33 million. We would jump Moose Lake would jump to 297th out of 337 districts. And Rushford Peterson's even worse. They would be at 327th out of 337. So what that, you know, basically what that says is we have a poor tax base, and it will be very difficult for us to pass a bond. I believe that in the past the state has come through when schools and communities are in crisis, and I believe that Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson are in crisis. Why are we asking for this now? Why is that important? I think timing's everything. I think the flood of 2012 is still fresh in people's mind. They wish to do something about it. If we talk about the flood of 2012, if I hadn't met Chuck here recently, I would have forgot about it. I mean, we have short memory spans. So you guys are going to have other things on your plate coming up after this year that may take priority. So we're saying this year is the year. And the other thing is that we feel we can get the most bang for our buck right now. Low interest rates, low construction prices. We think we have the perfect storm. We just need a little help from you. Okay? I have provided you with what I believe to be an honest picture of where Moose Lake schools are at, and hope it resonates with enough of you. I have a saying in my office that I look at every day: do what's right, not what's easy. I feel your decisions that you make with regards to bonding money cannot be easy. I would say that Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson have strong cases for you. Thank you for all you do as elected officials. Your job is not an easy one. I'm available if you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Superintendent, and Senator Lurie.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to just provide a little interlude before we turn it back over to Mr. Eller. Mr. Enderhar reminded me of one thing, to focus on something good as well. And I think it's really important, because one of the things that this flood taught me above all else is, you know, we spend a lot of time worrying about the youth. I think every generation does, looks to the next generation and wonders if they're really going to step up to the plate. And this flood really sealed it for me. Our kids were out, like you can't believe, helping seniors, helping homeowners, helping this school. The first picture in Moose Lakes is a whole pack of kids out there trying to save their school. And it's just phenomenal. As I was out, you know, after the floodwaters receded, talking to homeowners who were struggling, I can't tell you the number of times that I heard, you know, I couldn't even be here today if it weren't for the troop of kids who showed up and helped us. I talked to parents who said, I don't even know where my kid went. They got up this morning and they went out together. So our kids are doing well and they need our support. And that's something good. It really inspired me.
And us too. Thank you. Superintendent Taylor.
Thank you, Chairman Wigger and Senators. Good morning to all of you. Thank you for giving us an opportunity today to share your story. It's ironic, as Superintendent Enderhar indicated to you, is that what happened in their district took place in ours in 2007, so 5 years apart. The school districts are similar in enrollment. We're located in a floodplain. We experienced close to $1 million in damage. And I want to just iterate what Superintendent Enderhar said to you this morning about FEMA.
Superintendent, for the tape, you could just state your name and district.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For those listening.
All right. I'm Superintendent Chuck Ehler. I'm from the Rushford Peterson School District. Thank you, Chairman Wigger. Again, just to kind of indicate to you that the two school districts, as we come to call ourselves, we call ourselves the sister school districts. They happen to be in the Northeast. We're in the Southeast. But everything that's happened to us happened to them. And, you know, it's ironic, but Superintendent Enderhar is concerned about what his future is going to look like. And I can attest to you today what we have experienced as a result of that. Ironically for us, we did have some floodwater damage that infiltrated our school. And if you will look at the picture that I provided or the handout, if you look behind our school, those are floodwaters that are directly behind, and this picture was taken as the floodwaters began to recede. Ironically for us, our building, the larger building on the right-hand side, was built in 1906, and our damage came from back up raw sewage. So we had 5 inches to 6 inches of raw sewage in our facility. And so that even cause more concerns. But as Bob indicated to you this morning, his concerns, what do we have to look for? We're located in a river valley. We have a sand base. You know, the unique thing about a flood, when a flood happens, you can see all the damage that's taken place on the surface, but you don't know what's going on under the ground, under the surface. What we're experiencing is there is settling that's taking place in our building. We are seeing ceilings that are cracking. We are seeing plumbing that is shifting, a variety of things. So for us, each and every day is a challenge. What am I going to face today? What is going to need my immediate attention? For our teachers, and Chairman Wigger, if I may, I would like to provide just an example of, it's kind of a show and tell opportunity.
Please do.
As I indicated to you, our building was constructed in 1906. This is what is on our ceilings, in some of our ceilings. This is lat and plaster. And when this was constructed, obviously, you know, people are concerned. If you could look at this very carefully, there's fibers in this. And people say, aren't you concerned about asbestos? Again, this is 1906 construction. Those fibers are horsehairs. They were used as a bonding agent in 1906. Okay. But the unique thing about this and the thing that we're challenged with is that these pieces fall off on occasions. Some of them are large enough that they come through the false ceiling that are there. But it's not uncommon for our teachers to hear the crinkling sound and that most of them know what is taking place. So these are some of the challenges that we face. And ours is rather dramatic because you take an older structure that was built pre-Titanic, you put floodwaters and sewer waters in them, you're going to experience all kinds of things. Literally, we stripped our lower level to right down to the bare floors and everything came out. As Bob indicated to you, you know, what does he have to look forward to? He has to monitor, which he's currently doing. Just like we do, we still monitor our building 5 years after the flood. Dehumidifiers are a must. You must continue to be diligent about that. You must be doing constant probes, making sure, because no parent wants to put their child in a classroom that contains mold or other critical air concerns or air quality concerns that they may endure in their school experience. So again, for us, those are just ongoing challenges. And this is my fourth year in a row presenting to you as legislators and asking you to take a serious look at what we are still facing. You know, the unique thing about floods is they don't, as Bob indicated, they leave your memory, but for those people that are living in those areas, it's ongoing. You're going to be looking at a 20-year recovery process. We're in year six already, and I've spoken to other communities and other areas, and it's not uncommon for them 15 years later still to be making progress towards rebuilding and addressing issues that were brought about because of the floodwaters and flood damages. So as you can see, Superintendent Indahar and I both share with you a critical need that we have in our school districts, and it's our job as superintendents. We are compelled to share that critical story with others, such as yourselves today, because we have the awesome responsibility of providing a safe learning environment for our students and our staff. And we implore you today to carefully take a look at what we're presenting to you today, to understand and grasp our critical needs, because the future of our children and our communities are dependent on us to continue to build our schools or rebuild our schools. As all of you know, schools are a critical foundation for any community. For us, the challenge is, as Bob indicated to you, his concern is he lost students, we lost students. We were able to get some of those students back. But that's an ongoing issue that we face every day because of our aging facilities. How do we entice young families to come to our communities? How do we entice them into our schools? So those are ongoing issues that we both face. We encourage you, again, to take a look at what we presented to you today, and I also encourage you to embrace our school district motto, and that is always our best. We're counting on you to do your best. Be appreciative of our situation, support us financially, and help us to lead our school districts back into firm footings. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Miller. Questions? Senator Pratt, followed by Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent, you mentioned community contribution as well. Can you tell me how much you expect the projects to cost, how much is community versus the $20 million you're asking for?
We're looking at a
33. Superintendent Indahar.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair and Senator, I'm looking at a $33 million pre-K-12 building, and when it all works out, it actually works out to be about 50% would be the $20 million, you know, with, you know, interest and whatnot.
Chairman Wigger and Senators, the Rushford-Peterson situation is very similar. We would be looking at very similar numbers. And so, again, when I refer to us as being sister school districts, we mirror one another in all aspects. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. maybe I didn't hear, but what was the breakdown of the total project cost was $33
million? Superintendent Indahar.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, yes, $33
million. Okay. I was just, I had a couple questions, but one of them was that amendment that was added. How does that change the proposal?
Chairman Wigger and Senators, again, Chuck Ehler, Superintendent, Rushford-Peterson Schools. What that is our statement to you as senators and to the state of Minnesota that we will make a commitment as communities to help in this process of rebuilding our schools.
Could you, Mr. Chairman, could you translate that into more specifics?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, into specifics. The bill as drafted exempted the appropriation, the bonding appropriation, from the local match requirement. And that was probably more than was going to be palatable. We recognized that. And so the amendment calls for a minimum of a 25% match.
Okay.
Is the bottom line.
Yes, it
all
is.
Right. That's what I kind of understood, too. Mr. Chairman, one other thing. Is, in the, and I don't remember who mentioned this, but in the proposal from Moose Lake, it says remove the school from the floodplain. Is the existing school in the floodplain?
Mr. Chair, Senator
Superintendent Indahar.
Yes, sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator, well, obviously water was around the school, but if you're talking technically is it in a floodplain, that gets redefined every 10 years, and it was done 2 years ago. So what we want to do is we want to remove our school from the possibility of a flood. We own 180 acres in town on high ground. So that's what our hope is to move it to there.
Mr. Chairman, so technically, under FEMA's description, it's not in the floodplain, and that's how they could basically spend federal money to rehab the school because it wasn't in a floodplain.
Right. Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, technically it's not. I mean, if you look at that bottom picture again, I mean, I think that it's pretty obvious that when they redraw the floodplain maps, this is an area that we're on notice now can be flooded.
And I, Mr. Chairman and Senator Lurie, I think it's unfortunate that more... how can I say, maybe better coordination couldn't occur before investments are made in rehabbing schools that
yes.
have been damaged or public facilities that have been damaged. I mean, there's provisions where there's a floodplain that you can't rebuild in a floodplain. But when you have a designation that's not a floodplain and then this, you know, a future disaster comes along, you'd think that the FEMA would say, well, obviously this is an area that floods, but somehow that's not what happened. So, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that, you know, I call it good money after bad to try to rehab one of these schools. I mean, the $850,000 that it took to get Moose Lake, you know, suitable for kids to show up was necessary regardless of whether we were going to build another school or not. And truthfully, in the point number three on the Moose Lake issue is that there's $11 million of deferred maintenance costs that, you know, if we aren't able to construct a new school, I mean, they're not far out. I mean, this school really needs some significant rehab. And so that is kind of the point that we're making, is that, you know, we're going to continue throwing good money after bad. And I think that Rushford has probably put in a lot of money over the years just trying to keep this facility together. And it would have been a much better use of all of our funds, state, federal, and local, and try to come up with a creative package to get through this and just do better by our communities and by our kids. And so on the Moose Lake one in particular, that $11 million of deferred maintenance, we hope to defer it indefinitely and get a new facility built and not have to incur those costs.
Members, on the A1 amendment we adopted earlier, line 1.3, there is a typo. Lesser should be ER on this. And so Senator Weber moves to amend the A1 amendment by inserting E in lieu of O on lesser. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 297 in the audience? If not, Senator Lori and testifiers, thank you so much for sharing the vision, the need, the community spirit behind it. It's noted the problems that you're faced with on an ongoing basis and its impact in the community and the loss of students particularly, but not a loss of community spirit and determination. So our role is to review this, to make a recommendation to Senator Stumpf's division, and he's carefully taking notes, as you know, and that process will unfold over the next several weeks. So. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, all of you, for your time.
Thank you. Members, tomorrow we'll meet 8:30. We have two bills on the agenda at this point. Senator Johnson, Senate File 262, Safe School Levy, Mental Health Professionals. We also have Senator Bach, Senate File 301, a Technology Levy Authorization for Lake Superior Schools. I believe each request for hearing has been honored thus far. I can't guarantee that as we look at a logjam later, so if there's something you want heard, please let us know. If there's amendments, et cetera, as we put out an omnibus bill in early April, you can be thinking about this as it may align with various subject matters that are going through policy. Many of you are on policy as well, and you know what is developing in different areas. So we have tomorrow's hearing. Then we will not meet Thursday. We have the budget forecast. This room will be used for that, though we will resume a meeting next week, and a couple of the postings are listed for that. Any questions, members, on where we are at this point? Not. Thank you very much for your attention, participation. Our meeting's adjourned.